people have their belief systems, and they, their belief systems are, you know, based on what they think they know, right? And, you know, I know my experience with Manhattan was extraordinary. I just had the best time making that movie, and Woody and I got along really well, and he did, he was not inappropriate with me. So that was my experience. I don't know about anything else. I just know that back then, you know, I didn't think of it as a, you know, quote unquote bad thing. I was just like having this incredible experience in Manhattan making this movie with these incredible people, Diane Keaton, you know, Michael Murphy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just this great thing that was kind of like, it was life changing for a generation. We all kind of, that come from that generation, that was, that changed.
Right.
It changed our world, right? Yeah. And I think that that's what creativity and artistry should do. It should be able to have that kind of impact.
That is actress Mariel Hemingway, guest this week, talking about starring in that iconic film Manhattan, romantic comedy with Woody Allen, where she's 14 years old and plays Allen's lover. And we're talking about their cancel culture and how that subject matter of a teenage girl with an adult man would be in love with an adult man, would be a tough movie to get made and sell today because of, you know, there's a sensitivity to things now that didn't exist back when that was made. But this is a really great conversation with Mariel. She's really an iconic actress. I mean, if you think about the films that she's been in, Manhattan, Lipstick, Star 80, worked with Bob Fosse and Woody Allen and John Candy and a lot of amazing people, Peter O'Toole. At a very young age, she really broke a lot of ground, and I was really excited to have her on the show. So I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation. I hope you all are doing well. I'm doing fine, having a good week. Haven't gotten in any arguments with anybody, so that's a good thing. Our dog Daisy's doing fine. My wife's doing fine. Thanks for asking. Anyway, enjoy Mariel Hemingway. And please go to Apple and rate my podcast. It helps with some good ratings. And as usual, if you have nothing good to say, don't say anything then. But I hope you enjoy this conversation with Mariel. I really did. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. My guest this week, Oscar and Golden Globe nominated actress, known for such iconic films as Manhattan, Lipstick, Star 80, the TV series Civil Wars. By the way, I'm an ex-lawyer and I really loved that show. She's one of the hosts of To the Rescue Pup-a-thon 2023 on Great American Family, which is featuring dogs that are available for adoption around the country who need a forever home. It's broadcasting live nationally from Los Angeles from 12 to 4 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, this Sunday, February 12th. It's Mariel Hemingway. It's great to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So we have a dog, Daisy. We adopted her. We live in New York City at Bidawee. And before her, we had a dog named Rusty. We adopted him at Bidawee. And we're big fans of rescuing dogs. And
oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I have a rescue dog named Daisy too.
Do you really?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
She just turned one. She's a little Yorkie. She's amazing.
Yeah, it's my son and my wife and I, and we had a male dog before this, and my wife's like, I need another girl in the family. So we went for the girl. And
yeah, right.
And her name was Hannah, but her name before Hannah was Daisy, and Carol, my wife, liked Daisy. So Daisy's got little collars with daisies on them. It really works well for us. So, yeah.
Oh,
and
I like
she
that.
Basically,
I get it.
And basically, if you came to my house, my house looks like an assisted living facility because there are pads and blankets everywhere because Daisy gets to sleep wherever she wants to sleep. And Daisy And she has a weak sphincter. So we have to give her a pill twice a day. And I can't yell. Like if I yell, she gets a little agitated and there may be a little squirt thing happening. So there's a lot going on here. But
I totally understand. Yeah, I know. Your life it revolves around everybody's like different things. And it's okay because they're your animals.
Yeah. Well, the pecking order in the house is my son, Alex, Daisy, and then me. I'm third on the list.
Yeah, I hear you.
So how long have you been sort of, involved in these kind of efforts, and why this particular,
I've been kind of an activist for animal, rescue, health, and what have you forever. It's just a big deal to me. Mm. And I love, I've always had rescue animals. I'm in Idaho, and I live down the street from one of the most amazing shelters in the country, I think. I mean, it's just beautiful, and they do an amazing job, but there are so many rescues out there, and there are so many dogs in need of a forever home. And if you've never had a rescue dog, I can tell you, the minute you do, if there's something about it, it changes your life. They look at you like every single day. They no judgment. They love you. You're not alone. And they're so grateful.
Yeah.
It's quite an extraordinary experience. And I know you know it because you have your rescue dog. Yeah. You have your Daisy, and I have mine.
I think there's this myth that like pet homelessness like stopped with the pandemic, but it hasn't.
No.
And it continues to be a problem. Because everything happens that's great through word of mouth, and nobody that you talk to ever feels differently than you and I do that the greatest thing to do is adopt a rescue dog. So why, I mean, what is it? Just because people like the cachet of these poodles and golden doodles and all this other stuff? Why is this a continued problem that doesn't seem to subside with this pet homelessness?
I wish I had the answer for that. I think, I know my father was a hunter, so he would get a very highly bred dog, because he hunted and, what have you. And I think people get in their mind that they want a specific kind of dog to look a specific kind of way. And it's not that getting a dog from a breeder is a bad thing. Sometimes there are many breeders that are really good, but then there are, puppy mills that are treating dogs horribly. And they're just like, it's big business. And dogs, I think what happened during the pandemic, and I saw a little bit of this online, is that, somebody would say, oh, what a great thing. I'm going to give this as a gift for Christmas, right? I'm going to give a puppy to somebody. But you've got to really know that that person is equipped because it's like having a child. You bring a puppy into your life or a full grown dog. It comes with responsibility. It's not just like, oh, you can land them on your doorstep and they're good. They're good to go. It's like having a child. You want to know how to care for that animal. So I think a lot of that is it's a nice idea, but it's ill-conceived because you don't think about the person who that animal is going to and whether they can handle that situation. Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's difficult, but you have to have the mindset to say, okay, I've got a new, a new life in my home, and I've got to shift things. I got to make, I got to train this dog. I've got, there's things that comes with responsibility. And I don't think people realize that you're putting that responsibility on somebody when you give a rescue dog for a gift. Right. I don't know.
Yeah. There's a guy that lives across the street from us and he's got a dog. And I always say there are no bad dogs. There's just bad owners. Right. And so this guy leaves his dog alone. He's single. He's divorced and he has a dog. Okay, fine. He's not home most of the day. He's out working 12 hours. He leaves the TV on in the house thinking like, okay, this is going to like help make the dog not feel lonely. And then you see the dog and the dog's usually amped up or whatever, because he's had no human interaction for the entire day. And it's really troubling. And you can't, we said something to him once. We're like, maybe you should get him the dog, a second dog. Like, so there's two dogs hanging out and he like poo-pooed us or whatever. But I think it's great you're doing this because there's just so many out there that need homes. Hey, I wanted to talk to you about you had done such amazing work as an actress and at such a young age and really broke a lot of barriers. And I was curious. I saw something in an interview. You talked about the cancel culture, and you talked about Manhattan. You know, the film you did with Woody Allen, obviously, and where you play a high school student and Allen's lover. I mean, you said I don't think that could come out today due to the cancel culture, and I think you're right. I never thought of that, but you're right. And how do you balance that? Because, you know, as an artist and someone that's creating content all the time, it's sort of like you want to have creative freedom to do things, but you also want to be conscious of what's going on in the culture. But where do you come down on all of that?
I don't know. That's a tough issue. Yeah. You know, it's a difficult issue because people have their belief systems, and their belief systems are, you know, based on what they think they know, right? And, you know, I know my experience with Manhattan was extraordinary. I just had the best time making that movie, and Woody and I got along really well, and he was not inappropriate with me. So that was my experience. I don't know about anything else. I just know that back then, you know, I didn't think of it as a, you know, quote unquote bad thing. I was just like, having this incredible experience in Manhattan making this movie with these incredible people, Diane Keaton, you know, Michael Murphy.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was just this great thing that was kind of like, it was life changing for a generation. We all kind of, that come from that generation, that changed our world. Right. Yeah. And I think that that's what creativity and artistry should do. It should be able to have that kind of impact, but, you know, I don't really have an answer for that. I don't pay attention to that.
Yeah, and
role.
I'm
not concerned. I just try to be.
No. Like, and I didn't. And I didn't just.
Say,
just
yeah. I don't try to say anything.
No. And you know, just to be clear, I wasn't referring to Woody in that sense. I'm in the context that I took your quote of cancel culture. It's like the subject matter of a 14-year-old girl. I'm not directing this toward Woody's personal life and what he did and didn't do. I'm not one of those guys. I just think that you're right. Like, there are things that happen in life that art should try to reflect on and comment on. And sometimes it's uncomfortable, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it and keep it in the closet.
100%. And I think, you know, I think what you're saying is so important, because I think that we have come into a cultural kind of crisis where we can't have discussion anymore, because the minute you ask a question, all of a sudden you've cited, because you asked that question. Well, that means that you are,
yes.
You know, blank. You believe this. And and you're like, wait, no, I was just asking the question. And I think that is scary. I think it's scary that we live in a culture that all of a sudden we can't ask questions. We can't have a dialogue. We can't say, well, I'm just wondering if perhaps, you know, blah, blah, blah. But, and that worries me about where we are culturally, but, you know, things always shift. Things always change. But it's interesting that that the 80s were kind of more open to whatever than they are now. We kind of clamped down on everything. Like, everything has a category. Everything has a, It's just very interesting.
Well, you had a quote that was like, it was like you were literally like reading my mind. You said, we're not allowed to be in a gray area anymore. We have to choose a side. Who said that's not how we grow? And I do stand up and I act. And in my act, I've started to do the work on this premise where I say, can I just be the guy in the middle? Can I just be the guy that sort of believes some of your right wing stuff and sort of believes some of your left wing stuff? But now we're like, if you're right wing, Marilyn, I don't believe every single thing that you believe in. If I deviate 1% from you, then I'm dead to you and I'm the devil. And it doesn't work that way. Life's nuanced. And I just want to be like the guy in the middle. Like, can I believe like that it's okay to have a gun? You're definitely right, but you don't need a semi-automatic weapon in New York City and not be labeled anti-gun and hated by the NRA. Like, can I believe in some right wing stuff and not be looked at as a sellout by my liberal friends? And you're not allowed now.
I agree.
It's like you got to come out of the womb and then you got to point to right or left and pick your side. And that's where you have to be
pick
the rest
side.
Of your life. And it's bad.
I know. It's and to me, that is crazy. I love that you're saying that, because I think it's important that more people just say, look, I'm not one way or the other. I just have a little bit of this, a little bit of that. And that's okay. And yeah. That doesn't make me anything.
Right.
You're
right.
The guy in the middle. I like you.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've worked with some amazing people. I mean, what did you learn? I mean, working with Woody, working with Peter O'Toole, Stephen Bochco, like you've like had such Bob Fosse, like what did you take away from that as an actress and as a person, if you have a minute to talk about some of these iconic creative?
Well, they were extraordinary humans. I mean, you know, Peter O'Toole, really? Yeah. I got to work with one of the great actors of all time. He was such a character. And Bob Fosse, you know, the all that jazz and cabaret and, you know, and then he made Star 80 with me, just this extraordinary talent back in the day. And you know, like I've been very fortunate to work with incredible geniuses that taught me so much about the craft. Stephen Bochco, I love that you brought up Civil War. It was one of my favorite projects I ever worked on, you know, in the 90s.
What did you learn on that, working with somebody like that and Billy Finkelstein?
Well,
what did you take away?
Billy's great. He's got a great show out now. You know, I really learned work ethic on that show. Because the minute you do an hour series, you work hard and you work long hours and there's a lot of dialogue. And as you know, being a lawyer, I mean, I wasn't a lawyer. I was just pretending to be one. So there's a massive amount of dialogue to learn and bring, you know, bring reality to. Like you had to know what you were saying. You had to understand the words that were coming out of your mouth. I learned that acting can be, you can be quick on your feet. You can get to things quicker. Cause I had always made movies that took, you know, months and months and months at a time. And we would do, you know, an hour show in 8 days. I learned a lot from that. Stephen Bochco was amazing. Billy Finkelstein is still this great writer. I don't know. I got something from every project I worked on.
What was the big takeaway working with Woody as an artist creatively? I know he's kind of quiet on sets and doesn't give a lot of direction, but
he was super quiet. You know, he was great. A lot of things were just improvised, and he would, you know, throw something out and I would have to come back. And I was very young and didn't have a lot of experience, but I learned very quickly that, you know, that improv was a very viable and wonderful way to get it to a place that was kind of spontaneous and surprising. I don't know. I loved working on that movie. It was like, come on. I was in Manhattan. We were having lunch and cafes, you know, crew. It was like,
it's crazy.
What?
Yeah.
This is fun.
Yeah. Well, it's, but then you worked on other amazing things too. It's a testament to your talent at such a young age and a tough business. There's so much about your acting career that I'd want to talk to you more about. We got to have you back on, but you also talk about your amazing work in the mental health care area. I know your family's had history of that, but just how it's nice to see that that's something that's not in the closet anymore for a lot of people. And you have a really great podcast, Out Comes the Sun, that focuses on mental health awareness. And I know that's near and dear to your heart too.
Yeah, it's very near and dear to my heart. And the reason why I called Out Comes the Sun is because I wrote a book called Out Came the Sun, which is really about my family and addiction and depression and suicides in my family, and kind of trying to figure that out. So I started this podcast in affiliation with my foundation, which I just started, called MarielHemingwayFoundation.org. Which is it's basically going to be, when we raise enough money for it, it's going to be a resource navigator so that people can plug in to the site and figure out, wherever they are in the country, like what kind of help they can receive in their area, like whether it's holistic help or psychotherapy or a hospital or, you know, whatever somebody needs for addiction, for suicide ideation, PTSD, whatever it is. But then I started this podcast, Outcomes of Some, to talk to people about their stories, talk to doctors about their recovery solutions, talk to, you know, therapists and people that are making a difference in this space. And there are a lot of different solutions for mental health problems. And I think people don't realize that.
Right. Yeah, I think you're so right. Well, it's great that you're doing that. And it is such a pleasure to have you on. We've got to get you back on. There's a lot more stuff we want to talk about with you. So we will do that. It's terrific to have you on. Thank you for being on the show. And again, this weekend, February 12th, Great American Family, from 12 to 4 Eastern Time. Go out there and rescue a puppy, everybody. Adopt a puppy, for God's sake, or a dog or something, whatever it might be. But help with this crisis. And Mariel Hemingway, it is great to have you on.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much. And thank you for the interesting conversation. I like that.
Great. Cool.
All right, there you go. Mariel Hemingway, she was terrific, and she definitely want to have her on again. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Please go leave some nice reviews on Apple Podcasts, and also tell your friends about the podcast. Send some links around, folks. Always good to keep adding people to the family. See you guys next week.